Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
What a great show we got here for the Draft Doctors. No, Jonathan Crockett, that's right. A bit of sense, a bit of dignity, and dare I say, a better looking podcast than we've seen in quite some time. I'm your host, Steve Fizz, and we are talking all the massive trades from the first week of AFL trade period. It's not really the second week. And to talk about all things relevant, I welcome the Statesman.
I love trade radio. I know it's copped a bit of a battering over the last week and a half, especially seeing they broadcast for the week prior to any trades actually happening, but I love it. And there's a fair bit of rumour, innuendo and all that type of stuff, but it's that time of the year where you just start drafting your little teams already. It's bloody beautiful. Love it.
I don't know. I'm going online and I'm going on Twitter and I'm just seeing people just absolutely triggered. Tom Hickey's worth a first rounder. 30-year-old midfielders are worth three first rounders. It's just absolute panic stations. And if there's nothing that makes me panic more, it's my plane going over Queensland because I feel a little bit worse. So I welcome the only Queenslander I dare speak to, Cam McLaughlin.
G'day, guys, and I'm back in Melbourne, and the weather is glorious. I've brought it back with me, and you can all, well, I guess Victoria can thank me for it if they would like. And Fizz, just for the listeners, we're, recording this one a little bit earlier than normal in regards to 10 a.m. because, Stevie's, got something on later in the day, and apparently they don't have internet out there between certain times. So, we had to accommodate him, but it means that I've had to swap my frothy for a coffee, and I just don't know if my performance is going to be very good at all. So, yep, g'day, guys.
Yeah, well, I can't actually. I know, yeah, we're recording this 10 o'clock Sunday morning. You can hear the lovely Mrs. Fizz trying to get a cat into a cat carrier, which is
not going well.
G'day, Mrs. Fizz. But power on we will. And just so we'll get into the content. And just so all the listeners know, yes, we are recording this Sunday morning. We know we drop on Wednesday. It gives us a little bit of time in the off-season. So we will be focusing only on the first week. So there will be none of the news about Dylan Scheel or none of the... who else?
Hogan.
Lachie Neal or Jesse Hogan.
George Hall and Smith.
No. We want to talk about relevant players.
We're not talking VFL content this year, but... Yeah, so just on that, and we're going to touch on a few players who pose little to no fantasy relevance who have been traded. If you guys have got any objections as to whether they have any fantasy relevance or not, just poke your hand up. So I've got Lincoln McCarthy to the Cats.
Corey to the Lions. The big Cats.
The big Cats. Corey Ellis to the Gold Coast. Statesman.
I think Corey Ellis could be quite relevant because we actually know that he can get a fair bit of the footy. Obviously, it's been very hard to get games at Richmond the last two seasons. He's had 3 years in the system. Of course, it's hard to get a game your first year, but he was highly rated. He can find the footy, and all of a sudden, he's at a club where he is going to get opportunities. Now, it's obviously dependent on the role, but he was one of those players that we expected to play a bit of defence, then move into the midfield. Now, what we don't know is what the Gold Coast midfield is going to look like, but Corey Ellis could be part of it. Now, if he's defender status and getting midfield time at the Gold Coast, he's going to be quite fantasy relevant. Now, to be fair, he's going to be waiver wire. Unless he blows people away during the JLT series. But I think Corey Ellis could be one of those shock little 80-plus averaging defender status players. That's the potential with him. So fourth year in the system, we all understand that Richmond have been a great team for the last 2 years and also have been very lucky on the injury front. So he's in the best position to gain from nowhere.
Yeah, and I think for those with deeper deeper leagues, he's a ripper late draft pickup. Like, when you're getting down to those really speculative picks, you know, speculate away, I reckon. He's a good one.
I guess he's one of those players you'll pick up at the end of the draft, maybe a bit of a preseason watch, probably be very hot on the names of some salary cap coaches, I guess, Statesman, if only we knew a competent salary cap coach.
Yeah, don't know one.
Nathan Kruger to the Cats, well, State League player. Shane McAdam to Adelaide. Gary Rowan also to Geelong. Alex Fasolo to Carlton. And Dean Kent to St Kilda. So, yeah, we won't touch on those players unless there's any other objections.
No, Dean Kent's an interesting one, but it's a wait and see. If he's definitely in their best 22 and dependent on the role. Now, it sounds like they got him to be a forward. So I think he's, if he is going to be that sort of forward pressure player using his pace, then I'd assume he's not fantasy relevant. So I think you've categorised him well, Steve.
They've got so many of those types, don't they?
It is weird.
So anyway, we'll move on to some relevant players, and it's hard to believe we'll be talking about a 60 averaging midfielder as one of the big names to move, but Statesman.
Well, we
one
need
of your boys.
We need to clarify that he is a 3-time All Australian, and at just 27 years of age, should have plenty of good footy left in him. And of course, we're talking about Dan Hanbury's move to St Kilda. But I will say it's quite interesting when you look at everything that's happening during trade week and the speculation over some big names and the argy bargy of the terms of two first round picks for this player or this player. The most highly credentialed player effectively got moved for a late second round pick, early third round pick. And he's a 3-time All Australian player. It's just remarkable. So obviously a salary cap dump from the Sydney Swans. That's the way they've phrased it. But it was St Kilda that made the play, but obviously there must have been something going in the background. Now, I'm just wondering whether something else happens between these clubs somewhere along the line of this is step one of a 2 or 3 step process. So let's see what happens in that space. But there's plenty of good footy ahead of him. And as stated in the forgiveness pod, we should see some good value from an M3, M4 from Dan Hanbury next year with an average between the 95 to 100. I don't think you'll see his highs in that team, but he does create a better balance for their midfield because they've got too many in and under grunts and they certainly needed some outside run. And that's what Dan can actually do both. And that's why he is a 3-time All-Australian. So who does it affect? Well, firstly, we'll see a bump in their forward line numbers for St Kilda with a better balanced midfield. Billings, and I will say it is a bit dependent on their tall forward mix, but whoever is in that mix should get a bit of a bump, so you should get fed through more from the midfield. Although the people it's going to hurt are players like Dunstan and Armitage, who look like the ones who will suffer the most with limited opportunities in the midfield and potentially even battle for a position in the 22. So you look at their midfield and the first ranks would be Stephen, Hanbury, Ross, Steele, I think has now effectively earned his spot, and at his age, I think he's going to be given every opportunity. Akers, Gresham, who I think impressed and actually gave him a bit of pace, are certainly ahead in that midfield list. For the Swans, on the other point, it's a little bit unclear who's going to gain the midfield time. There has been long talk about Heaney and Mills moving into the midfield. And yes, Heaney's had a bit of a rotation through there, but Callum Mills hasn't. Now, we're talking fourth season. Yes, we know he got impacted with the injuries. This is yet to happen. Maybe 2019 is the year for Callum Mills to really jump. And obviously, he's already going to have his defender status. So Mills could be quite high value for our drafters, knowing that he's going to be reasonably a late pickup.
Yeah, I think Mills would have been great if they had got Langdon, because I think Mills is so good at that intercepting defensive role. But yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you look at Dunstan and Armitage, are they draftable?
It's a really good question.
I think Armitage next year is a depth player at best, and he almost was this year, right? So he was in and out of the team, and then he basically got a chance towards the end of the year because he racked up about a billion disposals in the VFL multiple weeks in a row. I just don't think he's a depth player next year. As far as Hanbury goes and the trade in general, I mean, something's gone on in the background, like what Statesman was saying in regards to, you know, I feel like St Kilda got too much value for that trade.
Yep.
And it to me, it seems like, and, you know, this is pure speculation at best, but, you know, Hanbury's got an injury history. And I've said it before on the pod. I reckon they've done a medical and found something that they weren't quite happy with that they could use as leverage to get a better deal.
Can I say that the terminology injury history, Hanbury was a very, very consistent player. Now, he had a collision injury in the 2016 grand final, which actually didn't give him a free kick, but he had the blow the knees action that actually gave him a collision injury, which means he missed a pre-season. He still averaged in the 90s coming back from the knee, but pushing himself too hard, he tripped up and got a groin injury because he was trying to make do or better. That's the one injury that he missed a pre-season and never really got the recovery time because he was working hard to help his team. So I don't think it's an injury history. There's one collision that created an issue for him, which being the groin. So I don't think there's any major concerns with him. We can all say that every player's, you know, one turn, one action away from having an injury history. Will Setterfield coming back from a knee reconstruction is a concern. Dan Hanbury, three-time All-Australian, one groin injury and one collision injury is, to me, something we just put away. If he's impacted this year with injuries, totally agree with you.
But anyway, another player to talk about. Cam, who have you got?
I can only assume what has just been said is over to Tom Lynch. Tom Lynch to Richmond was an absolute fait accompli. He was always going to end up at Richmond. There was lots of speculation about other clubs, but he was always going to go there. And I'm not a key position drafter at all. And so, because there's just too many different factors every week that can really hamper a score, be it weather, be it the opposition they're playing, be it whether or not they're two-man marking, whether or not, you know, too much for me. And so I just don't buy into it. But I understand why he'd be an attractive option to people next year in the draft. He was kicking two goals a game for the last 4 years on average, which is, you know, phenomenal considering he was in a, you know, probably the worst performing side over the last 6 years. But he was the only option in that worst performing side for the last 6 years. And so even though he was getting two goals a game, Gold Coast were probably only getting five goals a game. So he's making up a massive portion of their score. So he'll have actually more competition going into Richmond. They're a much better outfit. But I can see why people would think that he's going to get better service from their midfield. And so his score should definitely take a bump, and especially from this season where he was hampered by injury. He will definitely go better next year. But what I'm more excited about is the impact it has on the rest of Richmond. So Jack Riewoldt had a blinder year, and he had a blinder year because he was running forward to more towards the wings, getting the ball and then delivering into the forward line. And he also played, you know, when needed, an absolute key forward as well. But now he's got someone else to do the key forward role, and so he can actually be a bit more flexible with where he runs. And we all know that he's an extremely smart footballer. He's going to get in the right positions at the right time and basically be that, you know, you have a loose man in defence notion. You've got this loose man forward, in my opinion, for Richmond next year. And then compounding that, you look at, I guess, the impact it's going to have on those players that rest forward a little bit more. So everyone was, you know, people probably drafted Dusty this year, round one. It was pretty hard to miss that. But he spent so much time forward that it really, really hampered his output this year. And I think next year that's going to have burnt a lot of people. And so in draft, he's going to slip to fourth, maybe fourth round or more or lower. He could potentially see a bump in midfield time now. There's less dependency on him moving forward to kick goals when you've got, you know, $1 million a year forward and Jack Riewoldt in the forward line and Caddy. Like, what? I don't see Dusty playing as much forward.
What about for, obviously, he's a much, much better super coach player. I mean, 2 years ago, we were taking him in the first sort of four rounds. Is that where the money is? I mean, how early can a player be taken?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if Dusty's the guy it affects either. I think it's more Caddy.
Caddy, agree.
Because Dusty was still in the middle a lot. Like, games I've charted for Dusty, he's still taking 80% of the centre bounces. Now, if he just takes the centre bounce and jets forward, like, that's fine, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's still in there.
Yeah, right. And so you think it'll actually balance better for Caddy?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, obviously, one of these running small forwards takes. I think maybe it's going to be really interesting because it could really alter their entire game style.
It has to. So they've built on forward pressure, and they actually take away some forward pressure by having Tom Lynch in there in general, right? So Caddy being the second... Jack Riewoldt is a small-ish forward. Like, he's a key forward, but you'd say he's on the shorter end of key forwards. And so he's a bit more mobile. He can add that tackling pressure whenever he wants. Same with Caddy, same with Dusty when he's there, same with, you know, whoever else. They inherently lose that pressure. And so their whole game plan is going to be pressuring just outside the arc, then moving forward to contain from there.
So what's a realistic sort of number for Handsome Tom for average wise? What do you think? What do you think he's going to do?
Because he's so handsome, it's going to be probably 90 in AFL fantasy. I think he'll go. He was trending up before this year.
And 90 in AFL fantasy.
Yeah, I think he's gonna go well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big call. And then I reckon he's probably gonna go maybe 95.
I see a perfect storm building here. Richmond over the past 2 years have had the greatest luck with injury, and I think that potentially the weakness they had was the true depth in that squad. So they haven't had to call on that. The depth that they did have, they're actually clearing out now because they've got to create the space. So you got people that are on a fringe of a premiership squad or some that were premiership players that are probably on a little bit more than they would be if they were at, say, the Gold Coast or Fremantle or whatever the case might be. And that always becomes part of that balance to get it right. Then you've recruited a high-quality player. Now, I'm sure Richmond probably wouldn't have had to pay the overs some other clubs would have had to do to attract him. He's gone there for success. But what happens if Richmond actually get the average amount of injuries an AFL club gets rather than the thin? We could be looking at Tom Lynch 5 years into his Richmond career going, wow, I haven't been in a grand final. I haven't had a premiership. And all of a sudden, because how long's Jack Riewoldt got left? Is he 31? He's sort of round that. I mean, him and Lynch's two forward pins look superb. There's no doubt. But all you need is one of them to be out and one of those midfielders, because you've got less depth in there, to be out. And then we could be in a bit of trouble. So if you can imagine Cochin, Rance and Riewoldt are out for 4 to 6 weeks with, you know, mid-range injuries. How are they performing?
Probably still better than the old Gold Coast.
Well, absolutely. I'm just thinking more that they've been so lucky, and everyone can say that this year was a missed opportunity for Richmond. They've got a good structure. They've had their players on the park. It's just worked really well. I just don't think that that's how the footy world always continues.
Statesman, gambler's fallacy. They haven't had injuries. They must get them this
year.
Yeah,
yes. Put it all on black.
Well, what about the other side of the coin? We've seen Peter Wright came into the season pretty underdone, missed a good chunk at the start. Can he have some relevance for fantasy coaches next year, Cam?
I was going through the forward list at Gold Coast, and I was... There is nothing. It's bare as far as height goes. So it's him. There's not really another option, unfortunately, for them. So, I mean, as far as being fantasy relevant, Probably not, but he's going to improve on his past outputs just because he's the guy.
He has tonned up before, hasn't he, 2 meter, Peter?
Yeah, so he's tonned up, but it's so rare. It's very, very rare. I think he's averaged about 50 or 60 most seasons.
I will say with Tom Lynch, I don't reckon he'll get the 90 average. And part of me that says it, I reckon he gets the best defender on a weekly basis. So if anyone's going to get a bump from this, it should be Rewalt, because normally he would get the best defender, wouldn't he?
He had a good year too this year anyway.
And their inside 50s don't outstrip the majority of clubs. They're just so effective when they do, and it's the chaos ball and it's the little guys. So it's bringing it to ground. So they're just very effective in making the scores when they do get in. So I'm sort of thinking, yeah, maybe he gets an increase of 2 goals a game to maybe 3 goals a game. So it might be a bump of 9 points.
So that that would take him, just let me bring up the numbers, that would actually take him to 90 based on not this year, but last year.
See, this is why you're a McLaughlin, mate.
Anyway, so he's probably a hard man. He's probably like Dan Hannanbury. He's, we've loved him in the past, but he's certainly coming in at unders this year. A player who won't be coming in at unders, well, maybe he is, I don't know, but Scott Lysette has moved to Port Adelaide as a free agent, and he's picked up his flag, and I think it's a really interesting dynamic for fantasy because on the surface, it just looks like it makes more players irrelevant to me. So Paddy Ryder's obviously the incumbent ruck over at Port Adelaide. We should assume that Lysette moves into a split ruck forward situation with Ryder. Obviously, he's had his battles last year. I find it hard to believe they'd bring over Lysette on with the idea that he's a backup. Implausible to me. So it really renders Lysette, like he had a pretty ordinary average in a timeshare this year. Well, even not that much of a timeshare because Vardy missed a number of games, and it renders Ryder really hard to draft as well. I'd say almost undraftable. And the problem we spoke about last week, the overperformers, and we talked about Justin Westhoff getting so much ruck time, it renders him probably coming in at overs. I think they're probably somewhat relevant, but definitely overs. I think the only side that actually benefits is probably the other side, but then again, it looks like they've picked up Tom Hickey to go into a ruck timeshare. And it's just an absolute nightmare for fantasy coaches because it just looks like it's going to be more rucks we that aren't draftable, and probably Justin Westhoff takes a step back.
Is there an actual league option where you can choose no rucks?
That's a good league. I like the sound of that league. Just put in a flex. That's fine. Yeah. That's a horrible situation.
Yeah, look, totally agree with you. I understand it on the football side of things, and I think we're going to find with the rule changes that the actual two ruck system is going to come back in vogue. So you're actually going to see that a fair bit, and the clubs, I think, are starting to switch on to that pretty early. So well done to Port for reading the tea leaves and obviously getting the position, because what they actually have, which not many clubs have, is actually have two rucks that can play forward. And that's the key to using this the most effective way.
Yeah, so probably it's going to be hard. You know, and maybe even drafting rucks earlier when they're in that, you know, they don't have that timeshare situation is going to start to be a move. Like if the fifth ruck is 15 points better than the seventh ruck, then they start to have more value.
Possibly.
So disgusting. I hate talking about it. Another player to talk about who isn't disgusting, Statesman Jared Pollock's gone over to North.
Well, he's sort of disgusting. He's only really been relevant for 1 year. Let's face facts. Major coup for North Melbourne to get some outside run and class. 2018 was a banner year for Pollock with a career average of 92 points, but that's actually 10 points higher than any other of his 7 seasons. So you think a bloke that's mainly been midfield status, that his highest average before this year was 82. Now, to me, that's not really fantasy relevant. All of a sudden, he is. So, therefore, I think he's going to be overvalued. Now he's moving to a team that are not high scorers. So, I can't see him maintaining that scoring form that he had in 2018. Like the Saints midfield, North is starting to get a better balance. And I know there's a potentially a fair bit more movement, but that seems to be what's happening. So if they get the better balance and good outside run, because they've just been about Grunt previously, it's people like Ben Brown who could benefit. So he'll be fed the ball much better than he had been previously. And a Jack Zeebel could be a great option as a later pick forward. It'll be interesting to watch who this recruitment model will assist and how it'll help their developing mids like Dumont and LDU. So it's a bit of a watch and see what happens with them. For Port, it would seem to benefit Riley Bonner or DBJ, who both would get more job security first and foremost, and Bonner could even move to the wing. So someone needs to replace those ball carriers, and I think Riley Bonner is probably our man there. The Powers mids may also get increased game time, something that has been hurting a few of them, with especially players like Ollie Wines getting in the 70s in time on ground. My only real concern with that is the ones that have been affected with time on ground are all similar in and under players, and they could be the ones that still affect. So I'm still looking for who is the one that's going to be the ball carrier, and that's why Bonner keeps on coming to mind.
Yeah, like I totally agree with you in regards to Bonner. I think he's going to be really good next year, and my biggest question, I think, is... And he started to come really good. He came adequate at the end of the year. Trent Dumont was playing on the outside, and that's his role gone, right? So with all the mids that they're bringing in, or potentially bringing in at North, where does he fit next year?
Yeah, that's why it's a watch and see for LDU and Dumont.
Yeah.
But you would think they need to... You've got to get as much out of Higgins while you can, but he is a player that is the right now. They still need to be developing their future. And they've obviously made a decision, as someone we'll talk about a little bit later, but it means they're backing in Dumont and LDU.
Yeah,
I've got big issues with North.
Yes.
Big issues with North.
Agree.
From a fantasy perspective.
Yep.
So.
And Richmond's proved that you can be a good football team without being a good fantasy football team.
It's such a selfish way to approach things,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Just depth. What?
Look after their career and their jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. Like someone think of the children.
Midfield time. Yeah, that's right.
Took my jobs.
Well, someone who's been acting childish all off season is Cam, talking about a certain player and his supposed fantasy upside. Why don't you tell us about that, Cam? Which players moved?
Yeah, I feel like you might have a soundbite prepared here, so I'm just a little bit worried about what I'm going to say. But Dalhouse to Geelong. Okay, so confirmed on at the start of the period. And as Steve was saying, I am a little bit more keen on this move than most. Let me walk you through a scenario where he sees more midfield time. And then I'll talk about the other scenario where he plays exclusively as a pressure forward. So I think this year the Geelong midfield had the completely wrong mix. So Gary Ablett didn't two-way run. They brought him back for a fairy tale finish, but he didn't two-way run, and that was probably coached.
What a legend. What a legend.
Just, he's... isn't his reputation just tarnished from last year and probably next year? It's basically a legend that's gone straight into the gutter. But anyway,
no, he's gone up. He's gone up. Get this two-way running out of here.
What?
I just want forward. Go forward.
Go forward.
Nothing back.
So that's where
get the cheapies.
So that's where he's going to be next year. Speaking of which, so he will play a lot more forward next year. It's Yeah, Tim Kelly probably gone to the West Coast Eagles. It's probably still got a lot to go to work through there, but I fully expect him to be playing at the Eagles next year. Joel Selwood, I think, is going to be running off the halfback next year. He looked pretty good in the couple of games that he played doing that this year. And so even just with those three positional changes, you got one leaving the club, two going either more forward or more back, there's space. Like, there is absolute space in the midfield. And so I think the right mix of the midfield for Geelong is danger to stop playing forward and to get in the guts more. Just stay in the guts, don't worry about playing forward. Secondly, Duncan. Duncan holds the ball probably a little bit too long, but he's still a very, very good midfielder. And then you've got a rotation between Sam Manigola and Dalhouse. And I reckon if that's the core midfield unit for next year, that's okay. Like, that's going to be pretty good for the Cats and good for Dalhouse.
What was Joel Selwood doing?
Off the halfback.
What's Scott Selwood doing?
Scott Selwood is tagging.
Oh, what's Partiff doing?
golf run.
Yeah. Partiff will be on a wing.
I find it hard to buy. I just don't buy into you.
I know. It is hard to believe, and that's why I've got the second scenario where he plays exclusively as a forward pressure tackling machine.
Well, let's look at what's just left the club. Like, they've just had Menzel leave. They've just had, who's the other chopper? McCarthy leave. Like, and look at the guys they've targeted. Like, they've targeted, like, I mean, Rowan's pace to that for days. Like,
yeah. No, look, it's a good point. And that's why the second scenario is him just basically basing his game in the forward 50 with maybe some midfield rotation. And if that's the case, you know, clearly his average won't be as good. It will probably still, I think, improve from this year. But I reckon you'd be happy getting 85 out of him. You know, forwards 280 are quite easy to pick. Forwards 85 and above, you know, there's precious few every season. And so I think he's still a reasonably good draft.
No thanks. Who's next?
Yeah, I find it really hard to buy into. I'd be more interested on the other side, to be honest. Like, I think that's the real interesting side. What opens up at the Bulldogs?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I'd be buying into... I think Lockie Hunter is so underrated, criminally underrated at the Bulldogs. And he had a blinder season this year, and I think he can improve next year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because of Dalhouse leaving.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really, really like the lack of confidence you guys are giving me right now. It's fantastic.
It's our pleasure.
Doesn't someone spend more time forward, or doesn't... I don't know.
Yep. So that'll probably be the Bont.
Oh, God, I hate the Bont.
Oh, don't do that to me. Avoid all Western Bulldogs players until you know what's going on, and then make sure you trade them out when they're doing well, because their job will change in about 4 weeks.
Anyway, I want to talk about a player who I don't like. He's perennial would-be sleeper / breakout Dom Tyson, who has moved over to North Melbourne, and his Dom is not good. So look, he actually is a player who I should like. When you look at the numbers, yeah, I actually really should like him, because he gets around, when he's in his previous seasons, he's averaged around 10 contested possessions per game, which is really nice. Averages around 4 marks per game, which is really nice. Lays a few tackles, but he just doesn't do enough. It seems like North Melbourne is a really poor club to go to if you're going to be an inside midfielder. So he's probably going to have some sort of split. But you look at this midfield. They've got Ben Cunnington. He's a lock for 80% of the centre bounces. If Ben Jacobs is fit, he's a lock for at least 70%, because he'll be tagging. Then you've got Jed Godison, Paul Ahern, Sean Higgins, Jack Zeebel, Trent Dumont, LDU, even Jai Simkin gets stints. Like, that is a hell of a lot of players to run through a midfield that doesn't generate a whole lot of fantasy points. So my big question is, where do you pick him up in your draft? Is he an M6? Probably not. Is he an M7? Probably not. Can he average around 85? Probably. Is that good enough? It's depth. you got to remember, North Melbourne have been so unfriendly for fantasy, and I think there's best 22 issues on top of all this. So,
if Gaff said yes, does Dom Tyson get recruited? Tom Dyson.
It's a better name, to be fair.
I was actually thinking about the cricketer for some reason. I don't know why. But is, and if that was the case, what have they recruited him to do?
I've got no idea. That's what I don't understand. Like with the other moves they've made, I just don't get it.
So I think he's being brought in to be exclusively in and under. Exclusively.
Do they need that?
So I think they're banking on recruiting the outside run. And I think they're also banking on Zeeble playing. He was basically a forward this year. He played the same role as Travis Boak, right? But
yeah.
And that he'll keep doing that next year. I think Higgins is going to run off the half forward. He did that when he first got to the Roos, and that was brilliant. So he won't be in the inside anymore. And I would put money on Ahern and Goedersen getting a little bit more midfield rotation, like inside rotation as well. So I think
Goedersen got heaps.
Yeah, but I think it's only going to increase, right? So that was his first real season, and he's probably going to go up from there. So Dom will come in.
So therefore, is he actually in their best 22?
I reckon he is.
Over who? Because Cunnington's in,
Cunnington,
right?
He's one of the best. He's
one of the best inside mids in the game, and that's all he can do.
Yeah.
Ben Jacobs, if he's fit, he's playing.
Yeah.
So there's two spots gone. So, and then, look, you can fit your little Higgins, Zeeble, LDU, Simkin, 10% run in there. So there's a whole other midfield slot. But isn't it going to be Goedersen, Ahern, Tyson chopping all this up? I don't see it, man. Even if he gets it, is he going to score well? Because he's had it before and he scored terribly. Well, not terribly, but you know what I mean. 90's not...
I got some numbers.
You're not riding home about 90.
So I'll tell you what you're riding home about, though. You're not riding home about 90, but you're riding home about his last six games of 2016.
I've seen the back half of the year. I know they're all hundreds.
It is
fine.
A rip-up.
I understand that.
And then, I've got this thing with Dom Tyson in regards to did he fall out of the best 22 or not this year? And I actually don't think he did. I feel that it's a flow-on effect from the pre-season camp. I reckon it's political more than anything else.
Sorry? Explain.
So he was one of the key drivers for the cancellation and revolt against the pre-season camp.
Right.
And then, lo and behold, game week one, he's absent. And then he's in and out of the team.
Right.
Yep. So I think it might be a little bit more political. And then when he came back, he played a role. He was basically exclusively playing a role, which saw him do terrible fantasy numbers. So I think there's enough there for me to be interested in him next year. And I think M7 is probably right.
Yep.
Look at the level of talent in that 20... that was going around in that Melbourne midfield back when he was having his best seasons. It's not good.
Fair enough.
The North Melbourne midfield's better.
I think he's a watch. Very cagey. I think he's a watch, depending on what... they obviously wanted him, which is... I'm trying to work in my own brain why, but they wanted him. Let's look at the JLT.
JLT will be it.
So I'll move on to the next man, and he's an interesting pick, and Frio grabbed him, and to be honest... I'm unsure what their plans are or why they've gone, but he was highly rated once upon a time, and that was Reece Conker. Now, to be fair, he was part of that crew that was on the fringes and on the balance at Richmond. So part of a premiership group, obviously he was thereabouts. If he does have defender status and rotates through the midfield... he could be quite relevant next year. The big winner from this move is actually Brandon Ellis, who will now be clearly in the best 22, the clearance of depth. He was 23rd man in the preliminary final. The reality is the clearance of depth now creates him to be a shoe-in for the 22, and all they need is that little hint of injuries and he'll be through the midfield rotations. So something the Tigers have had some luck with over the past two seasons, but I think that will change somewhere along the way. So I think Brandon Ellis is the big winner. I'm yet to be convinced on Reece Conker. He has shown some good games, but I've never seen him put a strong patch together, and he's been around the system for a while. So interesting pickup, and I think it was a four-year deal from Frio, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes.
Yeah, I think you're right in regards to Brandon Ellis, actually. And I never thought I'd hear myself say that in regards to you being right. But it was sort of like, you know, I think he will significantly improve next year. And, you know, he doesn't have much to improve on, but he's in my draft plans for sure.
Absolutely. And would be value.
Yeah, actually, yeah, if Conker has got the defender status, I think he's a very interesting player, to be honest, especially if there's a departure or two at Fremantle, because there's certainly plenty of opportunity.
Absolutely.
Brandon Ellis still did average about 14 more than Dan Hannanbury this year.
Close to triggered. Close. Look at him.
That quote is going to be part of "You Suck." And that's you, buddy.
Well, that's true. That's true. Someone else who sucks is heading to the Gold Coast, and he's one of Cam's boys, so let's hear more about your terrible selections to go along with your Melbourne conspiracy theories.
I'll tell you what, the prophecy is coming true, for starters. So Anthony Miles...
George Hall and Smith, here we come.
He's coming next, this week, before Wednesday, you'll see it happen. But Anthony Miles to the Gold Coast... Look, I've said it before, and everyone sort of knows, he's got a pretty strong fantasy history when he actually gets to play. He fell off the bandwagon when Richmond went up, which is a concern, because clearly he might have been seen as one of the reasons why the team wasn't doing so well. The other concern is that, you know, going into the Gold Coast, does he fit into their best 22? Does he fit into their midfield? Their best midfield, and I see scenarios where it could work. So at the moment, you look at the I think he can coexist with the likes of Took, Firetruck, Swallow, Lyons, Brody and Powell. And my bet is, if I'm coaching it right, Took goes back to his old half forward role, then you see Lyons push to the wing, you see Powell push to the wing, and then you see the inside rotation of Firetruck, Swallow, Miles, Brody. And that to me is, well, good value. Like, I think my M7 every year is a speculative pick. Every single year. And I reckon this is, or you know, a bench mid, I reckon it's good value there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him as a speculation pick, but to me, I think he's a really bad recruit, to be honest. They've got him. I don't think Took Miller's going away. I think they'll continue to tag. I don't see teams moving away from tagging. In fact, I'd say it'll occur more, to be honest. But they've got your David Swallow. I think Will Brody's probably a lock to stay in there. Jared Lyons, you know, we fell out of favour, so it might just be a flavour of the month style thing. My big problem is they're just tagging. Like, they're just getting slow inside mids. Like, they need runners. Like, to me, some of these guys are going to be in some weeks and out some weeks. Like, I can't guarantee that he's best 22. Like, if you look at disposal efficiency, right? The gap between first and 17th is the same as 17th to 18th and Gold Coast 18th. They need people who can either use the ball or find the space. Like, and Anthony Miles, it's not him. I don't know. Like, I can't take someone who I don't know is going to be in or out. And even if he is in, what's he really going to score?
Yeah. And no, look, I think it's really fair. And statesman.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm just avoiding everything Gold Coast until I see what happens in JLT. so I get a really understanding what the mix is. There's a couple of young players I'm really interested because they're going to be high-end talent, but I want to see what type of roles that they're playing before I go in. Yes, there'll be some value with some of these mature age because they're space made, but who's actually going to get the role? Jared Lyons moving to a wing. Jared Lyons be moving to the knee full if they get some quality in.
Well, speaking of second tier teams, can we talk about the impact that Anthony Miles leaving Richmond is going to have? Their VFL squad has a spot. But yeah, so look, for me, it's a speculative at best, and wait and see.
When I say about the Jared Lyons, that's just, he's played some great footy for them, but he seems to get dropped easily. So I just don't know where that rates, and I just get a little bit worried. So I would have thought Mickey Barlow would have had a magnificent year. He did in the NEFL.
Who would you draft first? Would you draft Miles or Brody?
Well, it all depends. In a keeper, it's
easy. Not in a keeper. Redraft.
That is tight, in my opinion.
You know what? I'd go Brody because I just feel more comfortable that there's more upside.
Oh, I think Statesman's right in regards to waiting for JLT. That's one of the harder decisions to make until we see how they're deployed.
He could brain it in the JLT and still not make the team.
Yeah, that's the whole point of... I just don't understand the mix at the moment. But look, that they somewhere along the line, they're going to make a stamp. People rate Stewie Jew, so he'll have a plan. And once we understand the plan, we probably get some bargains.
Yeah, no, fair point. So I'm going to talk about another player who's moved across to the blue and white stripes. That is Jasper Pittard, one of our Statesman's boys. And he's had the one outlier year, and I think it's an interesting pickup for North because I think he's the type of player they need. I'm just not sure he's the player they need. They need some drive off the half back. They need some run and carry. To me, I'm interested from a D5 perspective. Like, I think he's got that sort of range. Like, they need some score launches off the back half. I'd probably wait and see if there's any other moves they make in the... we will have found out because it's coming out Monday or Tuesday, but as of the time recording, I'd be interested to see if they pick up another player like Hall, because I think he's sort of more what they would need off half back. Pittard, we know he's a bit of a loose cannon with the foot. To me, yes, much like Pollock leaving, I think it... offers more upside for your Darcy Byrne Jones, your Houston, and
Broadbent.
Dare I say it, your Hamish Hartlett.
Oh, what about Broadbent?
Did he get a game this year?
I don't
Did
think
he get
so.
A game?
He was injured the entire year, old man Broadbent.
That's a shame. Bonner should move up to a wing there. I think Pittard does have some fantasy relevance because, like I said, North do have some issues moving the ball off half back. Their number one defender for score launches was Scott Thompson, and then not much else. You're looking at your Sam Wrights and your Vickers Willis for that sort of thing. So I think they could certainly use some run and carry. Actually, he's kind of like Marley Williams, except is he as good? Probably the same, maybe better. But yeah, what do you boys think about Jasper?
I think he's going to be relevant.
Yeah, I'm on the same train. I think he'll be relevant, but he'll be a late defender pickup. And to be honest...
Yeah, I'm looking around.
He's one that I'd wait and grab him off the waiver. I don't think he'll get drafted.
I reckon he'll get drafted. I reckon he's got a name. I reckon he's got enough name. He'll be sort of around 15, 16, 17.
I feel like his name is best known at the hospital in Port Adelaide.
I think it's because I had him in that one outlier year and he really... save on bacon. That's what I just remember. It's like one of my fantasy crushes. Not a great hairdo though, so that counts against him. Statesman, someone did actually want to go to Sydney in the trade period, so why don't you tell us about him?
And someone actually left North rather than went to North, and that's Ryan Clark. He was a bit hot, like a few of the defenders in recent years, and didn't quite deliver, although he notched up 3 tonnes, and this young Ryan Clark And as North built their outside run, they didn't have room for him in their up-and-coming mids. And they've got quite a few now, and you bring in some talents, then you've got to make space. So he has shown he can score when he's got the right role. My interest with him is going to be whether he retains the DPP. So if anyone watched Ryan Clark closely, he played three different roles, off the half-forward flank, off the half-back flank, and also through the mids. Now, he started seven games in defence. Now, whether that's going to be enough for him to retain defender status is going to be the interesting part. If he is DPP and is one of the people that add into the midfield rotation at the Swans, then he'll be a very rewarding pick next year. But that comes with a big if. And unfortunately, Ryan Clark has been an if for two seasons now, so we just need to be mindful of it. His move will have almost no impact with the Kangaroos, with their new recruits. The reason why he was moved on was to create the space for that. So I think Ryan Clark has potentially got some great value, but it's just something you're just going to have to maintain and look through the JLT.
Yeah, it's interesting because there was someone we were talking about as a big sleeper at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Weren't we? So.
Yeah, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Sorry.
Agreed.
Yeah, fair enough. It'll be interesting to see what happens at Sydney. They've got an interesting mix of VFL talent up there.
Yep.
So, so Cam, moving on to possibly the strangest move of the entire trade period.
Yeah. So Braden Pruce, the Prius, highly reliable car, highly unreliable back. But a lot of people sort of saw this trade and thought, well, you know, RIP Max Gorn, you know, how do you draft him next year? What do you do with that? And, you know, I'll be up front and saying rightly, I think, that Braden Prius will probably not be in any draft teams next year unless there's an injury to Max Gorn. And then he becomes a little bit relevant. I think what Melbourne are trying to do, and what I noticed with Max Gorn's time this year, is that because he works so hard around the ground, he takes long stints on the bench. So he's the best tap ruckman in the game. When he's on the field, Melbourne gets blitzed when he's off the field. So the longest I saw was between 8 and 9 minutes of bench time, just sitting down, trying to get better, or, you know, re-energize and get back out there. I think all they're bringing him in for is to basically fill the void. And I think it's a really strange strategic decision. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're basically losing potentially a whole other resource that you could deploy elsewhere on the field. But, I think they're going to find that out pretty early. They'll trial the two together at the start of the season. And my gut feel is that Prius will drop to the VFL within the first couple of weeks, and Gorn will probably go back to being the solo.
So what I'm hearing is very average salary cap coach is you don't start with Gorn and you bring him in round three or four once his value's dropped.
Yeah, correct.
Just actually on the salary cap statement, I actually finished in front of more people in Supercoach than you finished in front of in AFL Fantasy.
But there is a fair chance that I might have finished in front of you in Supercoach.
Maybe. But I think it's a pretty hot take. I don't think we know. I think that's the only way to describe the Pruce situation. I think the potential is there for absolute catastrophe.
One quick question. Do we actually know the data for when Pruce and Goldstein played together and whether Pruce could actually score A-OK?
Together, they did not score well. When Pruce played by himself, he did okay. Like, he was serviceable. But you basically... And I think the most important thing is that Goldstein's numbers went way down. So...
Right.
I'm not a fence sitter at all. So I'm going to pick a side of this, and I think Gorn will come will be the same Gorn as this year, but only after about round 4 or 5.
So the play is draft Tom Bell Chambers at the back of your draft and then target Max Gorn after 2 weeks.
Yeah, trade up.
You'll get him on the cheap.
Jeez.
Yeah, but you don't spend any draft capital on Belcho, and then you get the premier ruckman besides Brady Grundy.
How many seasons has Max Gorn played a full year?
So that's the other thing. He tore his hammy off the bone 1 year, which saw him out for about 11 weeks from memory. Let me just double check for you, because I think that's actually a really good point.
Of course, I'm the statesman.
It's twice.
It is twice. So let me read through these stats for you. So 23 this year, 13 the year before, 22 the year before that, then 13, 9, 13, 4.
Okay. Yeah, but it wasn't... Yes. When you go back, was he the sole rucker?
No.
You know, was he in the VFL or was he in the AFL?
He wasn't. But there's two there where he's injury affected, and that's 2015 and 17.
But you might sort of make the point the last three seasons is when he's come into his own. He's played two of those as full seasons. So maybe his injury effect isn't as great as what it possibly sounds, which is a little bit like the Dan Hannabury. You know, he had a knee early in his career, but really it's only been one major injury since then.
Has anyone...
Well, even in 2015, he came in halfway through the year and just played out the year.
Yep.
So right. When he played the 13, yeah. I'm going to talk about a player who's not super fantasy relevant, but for some reason got all the talk in the world over the preseason, and that's Mitch McGovern, gone to Carlton, where volume is going to be a worry. A couple of other dynamic forwards there with Big Harry and Charlie Curnow. Interestingly enough, came from Adelaide, where he wasn't even fantasy relevant in a grand final winning team. I can't imagine Carlton's ball movement is going to be so good that they're putting 20 goals on the board every single week. So I think he is just a guy at the moment for fantasy. Better real player maybe for your team.
Is he a forward in that lineup, or is he going to be an intercept defender?
Well, I would have thought he was a forward, but I guess there has been some talk about him being an intercept defender. But it's like, doesn't it seem like they have a few of those guys? They were trialing Wiedering forward, trialing him back. They've got Plowman, they've got the other guy,
Marchbank.
They'll probably play Doherty there. I would have thought their defence was okay. I mean, if he was an intercept defender, I mean, that's pretty handy, I guess. I'd like to see it before I picked it up. And on the other side, maybe with all the midfielders coming back for Adelaide, maybe Hugh Greenwood spends a little bit more time forward. Statesman, I know you're big on the Fog.
Yes, the young fellow will get his opportunity. Would this be his third year or second?
Second. I think, I'm pretty sure second.
Yeah. Probably early for expectations, but yeah, let's see what happens. And of course, they'll be hoping they get Lukosius as well.
Yeah.
Interesting mix there. And the last player you're going to talk about, Statesman, is...
Is Will Setterfield, who's made his way to Carlton. And yes, he's going to be a gun, but only 2 games and under his belt and coming back from a knee reconstruction. He should only be automatic in your keeper leagues, to be honest. Mids only need to really only needs to approve his ability at the highest level. His move just ensures Taranto and Hopper get guaranteed midfield time, so they're just not going to share it. And obviously, we know there's potentially a couple more moves out of that midfield. So I think they are sort of bankable fantasy stars. Certainly between now and probably the next 8 to 10 years, those two. I don't expect Will to be hitting the balance sheets until the following year. I think he'll play plenty of games next year in 2019, but I don't see it more than a 70 average, to be quite honest with you. I think they'll manage his game time, manage his rehab, develop him, help him, or get him to help their midfield mix, but it'll be nothing more than that. So I wouldn't bring him into the midfield. He won't have DPP. He'll be in mid only.
Just get the games under the belt, young fella.
Yep.
All right, we've saved the best for last. Cam, why don't you talk us through the big, big move over to the Premiers?
Ooh, Tom Hickey. All right, good show, guys. Well done.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tom Hickey is just... yeah, I mean, look, Nat Nui has his knees. Vardy has... Well, he's Vardy. And Hickey, though, is... Vicky's just Hickey. Like, I get, like, oh... They've brought him over, I think, so that he can be either a backup ruck or a backup forward. So, with JJK and Darling, if one of them goes down, Vardy can probably slot forward, or Hickey can slot forward, and whichever one doesn't slot forward stays in the ruck to tandem with Nat Nui. But, geez, the least... just not fantasy relevant at all.
Does this give... I'm more interested on the other side. Like, does this give you some confidence in Lewis Pearce? The man Alan Richardson didn't know was on the list until around 17. Came into the team and actually... It was okay for football.
Yeah, he's still got to develop, right? Lewis Pearce. But I think he's probably... I think they'll stick with Longer for the year.
Longer and Rowan?
And Rowan, yeah.
Rowan Marshall.
Yeah. I just don't see any improvement. Actually, it's something that doesn't benefit fantasy players for both teams.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And this week we've got some questions. We opened up the questions and our good friend Al Borland hit us up with about 17 questions. So rapid fire. Is Tom Hickey still relevant?
No.
Was Tom Hickey ever relevant?
Nope.
Why would the Saints want another extractor mid?
Who are we talking about there? If he's talking Henry, he provides great outside run.
I'm just reading the questions.
It's also... So,
played a lot in the centre square this year.
Yeah, I know. He's got the ability both in and out, but with the team and the list that they've got, he'll be the outside run.
I always have this thing with anything St Kilda does where I'm just sort of like, just Alan Richardson things.
Yeah. He's got to go, doesn't he? Has to go. Will Tyson at the Kangaroos realise his potential or hinder it? I think we spoke about that at length. He doesn't have much potential. Is Bruce's manager the... Come on, people. Like, let's not be using the R word to describe things, all right? I don't like that. But is Bruce's manager that particular word, or will Melbourne play both Gawn and Bruce?
They'll play both. Yeah. Cam suggested only for a few weeks until they realise. I think Max Gawn could be a really dangerous forward. So the other side to Cam's point of view is that Gawn all of a sudden spends actually 40% of his time up forward and be a really dangerous option.
Wouldn't you just...
You know how to make Max Gawn less dangerous? Blow the siren as soon as he takes a mark. Hey? He actually spent a bit of time in defence doing a bit of intercept.
Yeah, he did. Yep. And I'll tell you what, though, if you throw on the best ruckman in the comp forward to accommodate Bruce, you're doing things the wrong way around, I reckon.
That's a great point. What will Ryan Clark do at the Swans? Is he a keeper?
I gave it to him throughout the year in a few exchanges. I actually gave him Lukey Dunstan. So just despite we got big cocks, no, he's not relevant. Delist him.
And the what effect does Gaff have staying on Dom Sheed?
I think we're going to know more when Tim Kelly goes.
Oh, it's bad if Tim Kelly goes. Sheed Island sinks.
Yeah, Great Keppel.
It's like Mururoa Atoll.
You know Great Keppel Island? So Great Keppel Island's off the coast of Queensland, up near the Barrier Reef. A massive hurricane, massive, cyclone demolished it, and they never rebuilt it. That is Sheet Island. That's
boom. Wow. You've just set the
Premiership hero. The last game that he played, he was the Premiership hero. I think.
Yep.
I don't think it stops Dom Sheed, but it's Gaff staying and the potential of some other recruits create some issues for someone. It may not be Dom. It may be someone like Chris Marston.
What? He's got issues anyway.
I think Dom's safe in that 22 now. His role, yeah, his role is questionable.
Yeah.
But I think he's safe in that 22 now.
And Andrew Rogerson asked, how will the new kick-ins and starting positions rules affect fantasy output?
Now, first and foremost, we need to hear from Champion Data of how things are going to be managed. So for the person at the mark, need to be 10 metres out, and you can just run straight over the line without being pulled back. In other words, you can hand pass, you can kick anywhere, you can just run. So therefore, those players that get the nominated as kick-ins are going to have a massive boost. So you don't need to kick yourself to get the stat. As long as Champion Data are going to count that stat, then they're the ones. So your nominated players that kick in should have a massive boost.
The goal square at the moment is exclusively for the starting positions now. There's no need for a goal square otherwise.
Correct.
But I think the more interesting thing is what happens in defense. So like the whole ploy for this is to allow the defenders to kick further out, basically to get the ball out of their defensive zone. But I feel like it now gives the other team one man extra in defence. I find it really hard to believe that they're going to commit that person on the mark who's going to be standing further back forward to attack the person kicking out.
If you do that, then they can easily take the 30 metre space. Teams won't want that to happen. I tell you the other thing that might come out here, and this is not to make Cam look like an idiot, although I am trying really, really hard, is that this is the true case of clubs working out the strategies from this. And playing two ruckmen may be hugely important because all of a sudden you can have two and potentially three with your centre-half forward slant, centre-half back, being marking options. So if you've got big marking options and you haven't got the players to cover them, then they'll be the kick-out target and it'll be the easy way out. So if you've got Bruce and Gorn and McDonald as your marking options coming out, then it's harder to actually compete against that. So all of a sudden, they've got one up on the strategy. How teams work against that is going to be challenging.
Yeah, I think
so. This game is going to become a lot more attacking, and I reckon the one thing that'll jump up from this is the stats in marking.
Really?
Yes. And I tell you what, the players...
Do you mean contested marks or just marks in general play?
Marks in general play, but contested marking will go up too because they will go to the big tools. And I will also say the biggest asset you can have now is going to be number one, endurance, and number two, skills. Players like Tom Scully are going to be worth a mint or a third round draft pick, either one.
Food for thought.
Strategies have been working through this already, so clubs will have their heads around this.
Yeah,
and that's I'm seeing two clubs that have gone really strong to ensure that they've got two ruckmen in their starting team, being Port Adelaide and Melbourne. Are those two clubs already ahead of the game in strategy?
Or West Coast?
Yeah, but they were there already.
They're right. Hickey. Bring him in. They're going to play the three. Who knows? Can we talk about the real trade that, you know, had the biggest impact so far in the entire trade period? KFC popcorn chicken getting hot and spicy. It's gone from original to hot and spicy. Get around it. Hashtag sponsor.
Did we have any other questions
Oh, sorry. No, sorry, guys.
No. So KFC brought in the hot and spicy popcorn chicken.
Yep, brilliant.
Is it good?
It's got a lot of trade value. So if you're having a meal with your missus, you can offer her some popcorn chicken and get back a bite of a burger. Fantastic.
I've been eating a lot of jalapenos lately, and it's not gone my way. That's all I'm going to say. So I might just be off. Oh, yeah. Might be eating yogurt. Anyway, I've got to drive to Ararat. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you up next week and talk about the rest of the trades.